a pleasant day today in terms of weather. Of course, any day is more than pleasant when you're discussing Krishna. By simply talking about Krishna, you immediately connect to the spiritual platform beyond the laws of time and space. In the material realm, when you talk about someone, that person is not present. But in the spiritual reality, when you talk about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhagavan Sri Krishna, automatically, he is present. Because the laws of the spiritual nature are such that there is no difference between the person and talks about the person, the name of the person, the activities of the person, the qualities of the person. Therefore, the main core of bhakti yoga is about hearing of Krishna and discussing Krishna. And in that way, you associate with Krishna. Association through sound, vibration. You may notice in your life, so many influences have come to you just through sound. By associating with certain persons, you partake in certain kinds of conversations and discussions. And those conversations and discussions shape your consciousness, for good or bad. Therefore, we have to be very careful whom we associate with, because that will shape our actions. Association means give and take, exchanging ideas, discussing. In this way, you take on the intimate characteristics of those whom you are associating with. If you associate with materialistic people, you'll be contaminated in that way. You'll develop those kind of aspirations, those kind of conceptions. It's so easy, as you've noticed, to take on the qualities and ideas of those whom you associate with. You can judge a person by the quality of his or her associates. According to whom you associate with, you will think a certain way and act a certain way. It's inevitable. You may try to fight it. You may say, oh, I can associate with anyone and I'll still be untouched and neutral. It's not possible. Human beings are social creatures. And they take on the aspects, the qualities of those whom they associate with. Therefore, if you are wanting to make the best use of your life, then you must associate with the best kind of persons. Birds of a feather flock together. What is so wonderful about this gathering that we have here this weekend is that the finest persons have come together to solidify their finest aspirations. Now you may say, well, we know we're all nice, but we don't feel that we're so wonderful. Naturally, out of humility, you can feel that way. The fact is simply that you're aspiring for the highest level of life shows that you are special. And indeed, with the proper guidance and training, these highest aspirations will fructify. They will get their fruit. Please remember the principle of association. According to whom you associate with, you take on certain qualities. Therefore, if there's one thing you want to do to change your life or to protect your life, then monitor your association and change it. By changing your association, you will change your life. It's as simple as that. If you associate with high-minded persons, you'll be that way. If you associate with low-minded persons, you'll be that way. And if you associate with those in between, you'll be in between. The easiest way to practice the spiritual science in this dark and confused age is to associate with those who are determined to make spiritual advancement. And to decrease your association with those who are determined to live in passion and ignorance. So the easiest way how to be progressive in your life is to monitor your association and change your association. None of you should feel doomed to a certain type of low association. Well, these are the only friends I have, and I'm far from home, and those who are going to my school or those who are at my work, those are the only persons in this country I know. Even in such circumstances that you are overseas, still you have to exercise discrimination. Because knowingly or unknowingly, by your association, you're taking on qualities, influences. If there's some area in the world where there's an outbreak of cholera, you will not go to that area and just loiter here and there freely and casually. No. You'll be very careful to avoid disease-stricken parts of the world because you don't want to pick up any contagious disease. Everyone now is concerned, will the Asian bird flu mutate into a form that attacks human beings, and will it become a global danger? But what about the materialistic flu that infects human beings globally? You don't want to pick that up. Or if you already have it, you want to get rid of it. Therefore, you have to watch your association. Now, because human beings are social creatures, you can't just become an island unto yourself and seal yourself off from everyone. No. That'll never work. I don't know. Have any of you ever tried just sealing yourself off from everyone and being an island? It doesn't work. You may do it for a few days, but sooner or later you want someone to talk to. You want someone to have exchanges with. You want some friends, supporters. To make it easy for everyone to achieve the highest goal of life, we have this association, this Krishna conscious association, this Sangha, for those who want to be most developed and most advanced. And you can find friendship and support in that highest association. In this way, your desires for friendship will be fulfilled in a way that contributes to your spiritual progress and development toward the highest goal of life. That is why many of you, I've heard the reports, many of you are feeling uplifted and inspired. It's because of the association. On your own, you will feel so overwhelmed by the flood of passionate ignorance in the world today. At your university, where you live, at your job, passionate ignorance is all around you. And so you can easily feel overwhelmed. What can I do amidst all this? Maybe I should just go with the flow. Everyone's doing like that. I don't know any other alternative. But when you come to a gathering like we're having here this weekend, you immediately see, I'm not the only one who thinks a certain way and has certain kinds of inclinations. I'm not the only one who's longing for something higher, longing for something better. And in this way, you become enlivened. Now, we don't have the whole city of Melbourne here. We have the cream of the crop. But just because not everyone is here, that doesn't mean our endeavor is not worthwhile. Some of you may be grad students doing your master's degree or PhD. Now, does everyone in Australia go to grad school and do their postgraduate studies? No. Anyone here, you're doing your postgraduate studies? Yeah. What are you studying?
Accounting.
Anyone else?
PhD in engineering.
Engineer, what kind of engineers?
Mechanical.
Anyone else? Hmm?
I do. Hmm? Master's in ERP.
In?
ERP.
ERP.
IT.
IT. All right. Now, how many persons are studying in your program?
Yeah, around 40.
Hmm. And in yours?
About 50.
Uh-huh. And yours?
30.
30. And yours?
More than
100. So, even at the most, it's more than 100. More than 200?
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe about 200. Okay. What was your program study? Accounting. Yes. Everyone is thinking there's a shortage of accountants, and especially with the GST system. I think this will be the career that will guarantee the good money and job security. Forget IT, right? Too insecure, too unstable. But accounting, that's the way. All right. So you just heard, in these advanced study departments, except for accounting, there's just 30 or 40 persons studying. Now, does that mean we should close all those departments down? Only 30 or 40 persons are studying advanced degrees in mechanical engineering, like that. No. You recognize that although there are only a few students, the world has need of these advanced studies. Similarly, in Krishna consciousness, there's only just little under 100 persons here. But does that mean Krishna consciousness is not worthwhile? No. For something valuable and expensive, there'll always be a few purchasers. For something cheap, everyone is ready to purchase. For precious jewels, some qualification is required. What is the qualification required to purchase the precious jewel of Krishna consciousness? Some understanding that there's more to life than how it's lived now. And some longing for something beyond the temporary, beyond the limited, beyond the material. And also, a lack of opposition to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sometimes people, they are opposed to the fact that the ultimate source of everything is a person. You are conscious entities. You have a limited amount of consciousness. Now, why should you automatically be opposed to a source of everything that has unlimited consciousness? Just the fact that you are conscious shows there's something that cannot be explained materially. No scientist has ever explained consciousness materially. They'll promise you in the future we'll do it. No one has ever done. The fact that consciousness cannot be explained materially lets you know there is a spiritual reality. Because, as Krishna tells you in Bhagavad Gita, second chapter, the consciousness is the symptom of the soul. The fact that you have consciousness lets you know that you have a spirit soul. So, there is the individual spirit soul, and then there is the supreme spirit soul. Supreme spirit soul means supreme consciousness. You cannot find the origin of consciousness in matter. Hardcore materialists say, we will in the future. Anyone can say they'll do something in the future. How are you going to analyze consciousness materially? There is not even one scientific instrument in the whole world that can directly detect the presence of consciousness. How do you measure consciousness? How do you quantify it? Impossible. So this consciousness riddle, it's a riddle for Western science, shows that they're up against an ultimate reality that is beyond the range of their comprehension. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains that there is the limited consciousness and the unlimited consciousness. When you say consciousness, you're talking about person. Those who don't have a deep opposition to the source of everything as a person, they can easily understand Krishna consciousness. Now, sometimes you may see that persons indeed have some kind of aversion, some kind of negative feelings about how the supreme, absolute source of everything can be a person. Often, they have this opposition because they're unconsciously speculating that every person I know is limited. Therefore, personhood must be a limited thing in of itself. This is speculation based on limited experience. Because all the persons I have met are limited. Therefore, personality in of itself must be limited. And so then you speculate, the supreme must be impersonal. Because personality is limited. So obviously the ultimate reality must be impersonal. This is a common mistake that's made. Just because every person you've met is limited doesn't mean that there's not an unlimited person. But some people have a hard time accepting that the Supreme Absolute Truth has individuality and personality. But look at it this way. You emanate from the Supreme Absolute Truth, source of everything. You're part of the Supreme Absolute Truth. You're part of Krishna. You have personality. You have individuality. How can you, as the tiny part, have something that the source doesn't have? The supreme source of everything, Krishna, has what you have and unlimited more too. But how can you, as a tiny particle of the Supreme, have something the Supreme doesn't have? You have personality. You have individuality. Therefore, that must be there in the Supreme Source of everything. This is the message of Bhagavad Gita. But some persons have a deep aversion, even to the point of envy. Why should we hear about Krishna? How can there be such a supreme person as Krishna? Either then they say everything is just matter, or if they want to be somewhat spiritual, they say, okay, there's matter, and then there's also the impersonal ultimate reality. Personhood and individuality, they say, are part of matter. But when you break free of matter, then you just become the oneness. Bhagavad Gita teaches you that oneness with the Supreme doesn't mean you lose your personality and individuality. It means oneness in agreement. Just like the oneness between a parent and child. The child agrees, I'll be one with my parents' desires. But the child does not lose its identity by agreeing with the mother or the father. So these things are discussed very deeply in Bhagavad Gita. Let's look at a verse in chapter 9. Chapter 9 is entitled The Most Confidential Knowledge. This is text 1. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Idam tu te guyatamam Prabhakshyam yanasuyave Gyanam vigyana sahitam Yaj gyatta mokshase shubha. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, my dear Arjuna, because you are never envious of me, I shall impart to you this most confidential knowledge and realization, knowing which you shall be relieved of the miseries of material existence. Now let's analyze this text. First of all, who are we listening to? Not an ordinary person. The Sanskrit says, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. Bhagavan, the possessor of unlimited opulence, is speaking. We already discussed yesterday how sometimes in India the terminology Bhagavan is applied to an ordinary person, which is totally incorrect from the authoritative point of view of the Vedic text. To be Bhagavan means you have to be able to demonstrate you have unlimited opulence. And what are those six opulences? Wealth, strength, fame, beauty, knowledge, renunciation. Bhagavan demonstrates unlimited possession of each of those six things. Now you know someone who's wealthy, but you don't know anyone who's unlimitedly wealthy. You know someone who is beautiful, but you don't know anyone who's unlimitedly beautiful. Similarly, in all the six categories, you may know someone who has a little bit of each, but you don't know anyone who's, first of all, unlimited in one of those six. What to speak of unlimited in all six? That is the nature of Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, because Krishna is the possessor of unlimited opulence, because Krishna is the source of all energy, we listen when Krishna speaks. But as soon as you think Krishna is mythological, or as soon as you think Krishna is a historical personality or an ordinary person,
Bhagavad Gita loses all its significance. So the biggest philosophical problem in India today is people thinking Krishna is an ordinary person. And then Bhagavad Gita has no value. But as soon as you understand who is Krishna, he explains himself in Bhagavad Gita, then you can appreciate the words of Krishna. So once again, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, says, Idam tute guyatamam. I'm going to tell you, Krishna is saying to Arjuna, the most confidential knowledge. Now, if someone would say that to you, I'm going to tell you something very confidential, the most confidential. Naturally, you would feel trusted. You would feel like you're valuable. Oh, you're entrusting me in this way. You're going to speak something that you wouldn't speak to everyone. Krishna is saying that to Arjuna. I'm entrusting you with this knowledge. I'm trusting you. Why? Prabhakshyam yanasuyave. Because you're never envious of me. This is Arjuna's great qualification. Should we have some air in here? Is that possible?
We are closing it. That one also.
Opening or closing? Yes. Let's get some fresh breeze. It's not cold today, so. All right. We're speaking about envy. Krishna is telling Arjuna, I'm going to entrust you with this most confidential knowledge because you're not envious of me. Now, how many of you have experience of being envious of someone? The honest ones raise their hand. Why? Okay. Why were you envious of that person?
Well, in my childhood, someone used to study more and get more marks.
Yeah, that's normal.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, because of competition.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else? Yes?
Do you want to be like them?
Mm-hmm.
Or much better than them?
What do they have? What did that person have that you wanted?
Well, he was better than me at a sport. He would defeat me every time in tennis.
Mm-hmm.
He would say, well, I would like to beat him.
Mm-hmm.
Be better than him all around.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone
else? Okay. Any other examples? No one else was ever envious of him. Yes?
He's earning more money.
Earning more money, yeah.
He's more popular.
More popular.
More good qualities.
More good qualities.
Yeah, really.
He treats people nicely, and I cannot do that. He's more powerful.
All of them.
Huh? All of them. He has a beautiful wife. No one said that I had to say it for you. I'm just a lonely student, lonely professional, but he has such a nice wife. And what characterizes that envy? It means you want to drag that person down. In your mind, or actually do that. Oh, well, why does he have that? He doesn't deserve that. Why is everyone appreciating him? He's not so good. Sometimes the envy becomes so intense that you actually do things to try to drag the other person down. You see this at the workplace all the time. Envy in the office, yes? How many of you have seen that? Yeah. You try to do office politics to drag the other person down? Yeah. You don't do it, but you've seen others do it, right? Or they do it to you. Maybe some of you remember, if you came to our retreats a couple of years ago, I gave the example of one young man from Delhi, and he was working in Sydney. He got a job with what was at that time considered the top management consulting firm in the world, Anderson. I think since then Anderson had some hard times, but back then it was considered the top destination. You got a job with Anderson Consulting. You had made it. So he was 25. He had finished his master's degree in Sydney in business, and he got this job at Anderson Consulting. And they put him in a department underneath a department head who was an Australian girl who was about 24. And she hadn't gone to business school. She had just been with the firm since she was 18 and somehow or other mastered everything to the point where she became a department head. So she was determined to make his life miserable. She even told him, "I've heard how you treat women in India. I've heard how in India all the women have to submit to the man. Well, you're going to learn something in my department. You're going to find out how life is in Australia." So she would just lord it over him. Do this, do that. And just give him all sorts of difficult tasks that just make his life miserable. She was also envious of him because, you know, he had gone to business school where she hadn't had that advanced education, so she felt it was her duty to push him down and give him a hard time. And then that envy was combined with the education envy was combined with the gender envy. Oh, you think you're a man and that you should be in control. I'll show you. Things are in this country. So this went on for some time, and even the supervisors, the top managers, they noticed. They said, "We know that this lady is giving you a tough time, but if you want to be part of this company, you just have to go through this purificatory experience. We'll see your loyalty and dedication. So we know what she's doing to you, but you just have to handle it to prove your worth." So he was desperately trying to handle it, tolerating her abuse. This is based on envy. It turned out that in her heart, she was lonely and unfulfilled, and she was envious that he seemed to know what he was doing. He was confident. He was stable. Whereas inside her heart, she was very unstable. So she was envious because of that reason, too. I don't know. You've ever noticed sometimes people attack others just because they're envious that this person seems to know what he's doing. This person seems happy. This person seems confident. And so some people will attack a person like that because of their own personal insecurities. So it turned out she was doing that. And then one day, after such abuse, he came to work. And she was looking very sad, and it was a Monday morning, and there were tears in her eyes. And she said to him, "I've had such a horrible weekend. Maybe you and I should go out and have a cup of coffee." And he was like, "What a move." She was looking at him, and "Maybe you and I need to talk something." So he was like shocked. Wait a minute, we're going now from her giving me an extremely hellish time, and now it seems she's giving me some kind of invitation. What do I do? So envy can be a very horrible thing to experience. Maybe some of you have gone through some incident at the office where someone's trying to undermine you, get rid of you, because they don't like the way you do things so nicely. Any happened anyway?
Yeah. Yes.
What was it like?
Terrible, because they don't know what they're doing, and because I know what I'm doing, it's hard to do.
They try to make your job difficult, or they make up things, false things about you, and tell the higher ups. Huh?
Personal attacks.
Personal attacks, yes. Now, how many of us would ever think that we have an envy problem with Krishna? The first thing you'll say is, well, what does Krishna have that I want? Once you understand the science of God, then you'll see, indeed, how we're envious of Krishna. What does Krishna have that you want? Krishna is unlimitedly successful at enjoyment. That's the main reason why we want to pretend that Krishna doesn't exist. That is the main reason why we want to pretend that Krishna is mythological or impersonal. If there's impersonal, then there can't be any enjoyment. So by saying the Supreme Absolute Truth is impersonal, then you automatically get rid of the reality of the Supreme Enjoyer. This is what we're most envious of about Krishna. The more you hear about Krishna, the more you understand Krishna, the more you'll see how this envy is there. In our own life, materially speaking, what do we want? We want to be the enjoyer. We want to be the controller. We want to be happy, powerful, and strong. And material nature always frustrates these attempts. You all know what it's like. You have a big plan in your mind. I'm going to enjoy, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. It's all going to be for my pleasure. And your attempts are frustrated. Even when you get what you want, it doesn't satisfy you. There are problems even when you get what you want. And of course, generally you don't get what you want. But even if you do get what you want, there are problems. You're not satisfied. When you get that thing you want, it turns out to create even more problems. This is our status as a false enjoyer in this world. But Krishna has no problems whatsoever with his enjoyment. Krishna's enjoyment is unlimited. We can't accommodate that, and therefore we try to push Krishna out of the situation. Even people can quote Bhagavad Gita and have no understanding at all about Krishna. They just treat it as a book of very nice sayings, very nice slogans. But they don't understand Krishna. Without understanding Krishna, Bhagavad Gita has no value. And remember, the biggest problem we have with Krishna is his supreme enjoying abilities. You understand how you can become envious of someone who has something better than you. They have more money, they have more knowledge, they have more beauty. But Krishna has unlimitedly more of all these things. Therefore, the root cause of our material existence is that we're envious of Krishna. That is why he's explaining to Arjuna in this verse. Because you are never envious of me, I shall impart to you this most confidential knowledge. And what is the practical application of what Krishna is going to teach Arjuna? Many of you are engineers, technologists, so you want to know, what is the practical application? All right, there's theory, but then there is application. So, what is the application practically of the wisdom that Krishna is giving? He says quite clearly, yajgatva mokshase shubhat. Knowing what I'm going to teach you will cause you to be released from material existence. Mokshase shubhat. Just like in the play yesterday about the cobbler and the Brahmana priest. The question was, when the Brahmana priest, the caste Brahmana, he was wanting to know, when will I get moksha? Moksha, liberation, freedom from material existence. He told Narayana, go ask Narayan when I will get moksha, liberation from material existence. In this verse, Krishna is saying, yajgatva mokshase shubhat. Knowing this knowledge that I'm going to teach you, you'll be released. You'll get moksha from miserable material existence. That is practical. Now, why is material existence miserable? Because of its temporariness. You can't hold on to anything here, and therefore, there's so much pain. Even when you get what you want, you lose it. Time spoils everything. And while you're losing all the things that you want, there are so many impediments to getting other things that you want. Meanwhile, the miseries of the body and mind and material nature are constantly affecting you. An intelligent person wants to get out of this kind of situation. But how do you do that, and where do you go? The secret of Bhagavad Gita is that moksha, or liberation from material existence, is automatically achieved by engaging in the devotional service of the Lord. By hearing and discussing Krishna, by chanting Hare Krishna, by using your life energies and resources to serve Krishna, you are automatically exempt from material existence. Now, if you have a problem somewhere and you're invited somewhere else, you want to know where is the place I should go to get away from this problem, and what is the nature of that place that I should go to? So, simply getting freedom from material existence is not enough. You need to be established in a non-problematic situation. You need to be established in freedom. So, the liberation that Krishna is speaking of is not simply relief from suffering. Just like, let's say, all your life, you've been banging your head against the wall. Now, if I can get you to stop banging your head against the wall, that is a great achievement. But has it fully solved your problems in life? No. Now that you've stopped banging your head against the wall, what do you do with your head? Now, Buddha taught that material existence is misery. Buddha said, I've got two things to teach, and only two things. What is dukkha, misery, and how to escape from dukkha? Well, what do you do once you're out of the misery? That Buddha didn't teach. He taught an escape method, but that escape method is incomplete, because unless you become established in the spiritual reality, you'll just go right back again into the fire. Let's say there's a burning house on fire, and we convince you, come out of the burning house, you're going to suffer, come out. At first,
you protest, what's wrong with being in this house? It's nice and warm and cozy, free heating. nice smoke in the air. I don't have to buy any incense. Why should I leave this house? But someone is telling you again and again, this situation is miserable. Escape, run out. So finally you do that, realize it. I shouldn't be in a house that's on fire. I should get out. You run out of the house on fire. To where? It's not enough just to leave the house. Where do you go? When the World Trade Centers were attacked by the terrorists and the top of the buildings were burning, many people on 100th floor, 103rd floor, they went to the windows and the flames were behind them. They had to jump, even though they knew there's nothing to escape to. The flames were behind them, the smoke was behind them. They couldn't stay in the burning building, but where was the escape? By jumping out the window, it's guaranteed death. So it's not enough just to escape. Where are you going when you escape? That is the contribution of Bhagavad Gita. Krishna teaches you to escape material existence by engaging in the devotional service of the Lord. Bhakti yoga means sense activity for the satisfaction of the Supreme. That's why you can practice bhakti yoga while you're in this world, but you won't be of the world. Just like Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita fought, but he was not an ordinary warrior because he was fighting on the request of Krishna. His fighting was dedicated to Krishna's pleasure. So Arjuna can dedicate his fighting to Krishna's pleasure. You can dedicate your occupation to Krishna's pleasure. How do you do that? Make Krishna the enjoyer of the activity. Make Krishna the enjoyer of the results of the activity. In this way, we're not giving you some process by which you should reject the world. No, we are teaching you how to live in the world in a deeper way. A way that avoids the suffering and develops your spiritual life. In other words, we're teaching, based on what Krishna says, how you can be active in this world, yet at the same time you'll be free from the world. You can have families, you can work, you can study, but at the same time while you're doing those activities, you're free from the world. Everything depends on who is the enjoyer of what you're doing. Bhakti yoga, Krishna consciousness, means dedicating all your activities to Krishna, putting Krishna in the center of everything. In this way, while being in the world, you're not of the world. But while being active in the world, you're free from the world at the same time. You live in the world at a deeper level than everyone else. And you have much deeper experiences. This is the art of work. How to sacrifice for Krishna. If you don't sacrifice for Krishna, you'll sacrifice in so many other ways. Just like when you work, you're sacrificing for the government, you pay taxes, you're sacrificing for your boss, you have to do things a certain way. So life is full of sacrifice. In family life, there's sacrifice. You give up your independence, you do what your wife says, the wife does what the husband says. You have to sacrifice for your children, for their education. Everything takes time,
compromise, effort. What's wrong with sacrificing for Krishna? The more you understand who Krishna is, the more you'll be inspired to sacrifice for Krishna. So the Lord is telling Arjuna in this verse, my dear Arjuna, because you are never envious of me, I shall impart to you this most confidential knowledge and realization, knowing which you shall be relieved of the miseries of material existence. Let's hear part of the purport. Srila Prabhupada explains, as a devotee hears more and more about the Supreme Lord, he becomes enlightened. This hearing process is recommended in the Srimad Bhagavatam. The Srimad Bhagavatam, for those of you who don't know, is the graduate study to Bhagavad Gita. It says, the messages of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are full of potency, and these potencies can be realized if topics regarding the Supreme Godhead are discussed amongst devotees. This cannot be achieved by the association of mental speculators or academic scholars, because it is realized knowledge. The devotees are constantly engaged in the Supreme Lord's service. The Lord understands the mentality and sincerity of a particular living entity who is engaged in Krishna consciousness and gives him the intelligence to understand the science of Krishna in the association of devotees. Discussion of Krishna is very potent, and if a fortunate person has such association and tries to assimilate the knowledge, then he will surely make advancement towards spiritual realization. Lord Krishna, in order to encourage Arjuna to higher and higher elevation in his potent service, describes in this ninth chapter matters more confidential than any he has already disclosed. What we're trying to do here, what we are hoping, is that you'll feel an increased desire to understand Krishna. And that way your life will start to become perfect. Without understanding Krishna, the complete whole, we're incomplete, struggling in this world without our connection to the source of everything. Once we give up our envy of Krishna, how can there be a Supreme Person who has everything? Once we give up our envy that Krishna is unlimitedly successful, unlimitedly expert, unlimitedly enjoying, and we listen, then our lives can begin to straighten out in the association of devotees. I'm hoping that all of you are feeling increased desire to understand Krishna. Forget this stuff that Krishna is mythological, Krishna is an ordinary person, or he was an historical person, and go to the deep levels of Bhagavad Gita. Understand Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And because you're not envious, Krishna will allow you to understand him. How many of you have allowed a person who's envious and hostile to you to understand your confidential secrets? No. None of you will reveal yourself to someone who's envious of you, someone who's trying to drag you down. You won't do that. You'll be very protective. You only reveal yourself to those who are your supporters. Similarly, Krishna is saying the same thing. Arjuna, because you're not envious of me, I'll explain myself to you fully. I'll tell you all the secrets. This is personalism. So you see, this personalism goes on even at the highest level, the level of Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You, as a particle of Bhagavan, of Krishna, have the same tendency. You'll only reveal yourself to those who have a favorable attitude towards you. And Krishna is doing the same. The process of bhakti yoga is how to become favorable to Krishna. And then Krishna reveals to you. So I hope that many of you are feeling encouragement and nourishment to go deeper into your spiritual practices without any unnecessary fear that you're going to have to reject the world. Who has rejected the world? Just like I was explaining yesterday. Even as a sannyasi, I'm involved with the world in a different way, but still I'm involved. Just like I was telling you, the seat measurements for all the different airlines. When I go to a travel agent, I do not ask the travel agent for advice. I tell the travel agent what to do. The travel agents, they don't know so much these days because everything is so complicated. Unless you want to pay a lot of money to fly, or if you don't care what airline you fly on, you know, in terms of the reliability, the frequent flyer mileage available, and so on, it's just very easy to travel. Just go to the travel agent and say, I want to fly to Mumbai, and then they'll say, oh, take this, okay. It's like if you're going to buy a video camera. You just go to the store and say, what do you recommend? Take this. Brand X, made in the Philippines. And you buy it. But if you are discerning, then you're on top of what you're doing. So a devotee of Krishna is more careful than anyone to do things nicely for Krishna's pleasure. So I can tell you all about airlines, so many technical points and fares and seating arrangements. That's an example that I haven't rejected the world, but I'm living in the world for a different purpose, with a different connection. I'm living in the world connected to Krishna. I'm not living in the world as an amputated limb. Have any of you seen an amputated limb before? Just cut off from the person's body is completely unattractive. In fact, it's kind of repulsive. You just see a cut off hand or cut off arm. When there are these terrorist bomb attacks, that's one thing everyone reports seeing. Pieces of bodies blown everywhere. Limbs scattered throughout the street. People are very repulsed by it. It was horrible. But without our connection to Krishna, we're like amputated limbs. We have no real beauty, no real knowledge, no real attractiveness, no real happiness. Simply connect your life to Krishna, connect the part to the whole, and then you see a different world. So we're not advocating rejecting the world. We're advocating living in the world in a deeper way, on a deeper level. That is the point of Bhagavad Gita. Why should you reject the world? It's Krishna's energy. It's not simply the spiritual energy that belongs to Krishna. Also, the material energy belongs to Krishna. So we don't reject it. We just learn how to deal with it correctly. That is bhakti yoga. All right, any questions? Yes.
Maharaj, we were discussing about enviousness towards Krishna. I certainly have at least some enviousness towards Krishna.
Why?
Because of the good qualities and it's so unlimited and things like that. But I recently started chanting. And in chanting and getting involved with association of devotees and getting involved in bhakti yoga process, will it reduce my enviousness towards Krishna?
Definitely, because you're doing activities favorable to Krishna. Therefore, the envy will be cleansed away. You're acting in a way to get Krishna's attention. you're doing activities that give Krishna pleasure. So therefore, just like he told Arjuna, because you're not envious of me, I'm going to teach you. Similarly, Krishna will teach you. You'll be able to understand Bhagavad Gita. Isn't it so? Now you're reading Bhagavad Gita, suddenly you see much deeper things. Because you're not envious. And you know? I'm always thinking this morning.
Prabhu, regarding priorities, you are going to talk in the fourth lecture?
Mm-hmm. You can ask now, though.
No, basically, how to set the priorities right and all that. So, it's better to put it after your lecture.
No, you can ask now. How to make the priorities right?
Yes.
You have to look at what is temporary and what is eternal in your life. Don't become overwhelmed by activities which have just a temporary value, temporary benefit. And even while performing activities that have a temporary value, try to connect those activities to Krishna consciousness in some way so that those activities will have an eternal benefit. That's what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. All that you do, do for me. Get the guidance necessary to do everything in your life for Krishna as much as possible. How much money do you need? How much success do you need? How much education do you need? How many material conveniences do you need? Like our Bhagavad Gita was telling me about his management job at Kohl's. He was managing the fruit and vegetable section. He has a degree in IT, but you know how that is these days. The IT world is very shaky, so Kohl's offered him a fast track management position on the way up. So he would do his job in 8 hours and then leave and go home. But then the other manager started to complain. Why is he leaving early when we're all working 12 hours a day? And he thought, I've just done my job quicker. I'm more efficient. I got everything done in 8 hours. I go home, chant Hare Krishna, read Bhagavad Gita, go to the temple. But the other managers didn't see it that way. They became envious. We're staying around here 12 hours. He's only here for 8 hours. They didn't think that, well, maybe he's brighter than us. He gets the work done in a quicker time. No, they just, who is he to leave after 8 hours? So then the chiefs had to tell him, you know, this job is your home. You have to think of your position and your department as your everything. Your fruit and vegetable department is your, it's like your private business. You sleep with it, you eat it, you it's your intimate companion. How can you leave after 8 hours? All right, we appreciate that you're quick and you get the work done quicker. But still, it sets a bad example to the other managers if you go home. They're all staying here 12 hours a day. That is normal. Now, interestingly, they only paid him for 8 hours a day, but they assume that you're going to spend 12 hours a day there because you want to build your career. You want to advance to the corporate level. So, this is exploitation. They start you off as a beginning manager, department head, and you get a little bit more, maybe $100 a week more than, you know, an ordinary worker. But the hope is, they dangle the hope in front of you. After 5 years, your salary goes up like this. After 10 years, it goes up like that. All while you're working 12 hours a day, and the job becomes your everything. They told them, this supermarket is your home. So he had to set his priorities. He decided it's not worth it. In fact, he told them, take me out of the management role, put me under. That way, I can spend mornings in the temple chanting Hare Krishna. What they were offering him didn't fit his priorities to be Krishna conscious. They were demanding too much. How can you work 12 hours a day and have time for your spiritual life? So he had set his priorities and decided, this is not working. This is not what I want. To consider this supermarket my home and give it 12 hours a day for the future hope 5 or 10 years from now that I'll get the high manager's salary. Not enough. It doesn't do it for me. My spiritual life is the most important thing. On the other hand, I've explained before, and I was explaining this in Mumbai to some IIT students a few days ago. Is that someone to be envious of, someone who's gone to IIT? Huh? Huh? So, I was telling the students there about IT workers who have actually very conducive or very appropriate jobs for practicing Krishna consciousness. They're programmers. They can come to their office anytime, the day and night. The bosses don't care as long as you get the project done on time. Do you have any programmers like that here? Yes. As long as you just get the job done. You can walk in there 2 in the morning or 2 in the afternoon, whatever. They just want to see you're putting in the work effort and get it done. And you don't have to socialize. You have your own cubicle, your own scene. Just get the work done. Mm-hmm. So this is a good job for becoming Krishna conscious. You tailor your own hours. You can use the morning hours for chanting Hare Krishna. You can go to the temple in the morning. You can hear Srimad Bhagavatam in the morning. You can go to all the festivals. So I would tell devotees who have this job, why do you want to give up such a job? Sometimes neophyte devotees, beginning devotees, they get into a wrong understanding of bhakti yoga. I have this job, it's material, it's maya. So I asked them, why aren't you taking such a good job seriously? Is it that you're ready to become a brahmachari?
No.
All right, you're not ready to be a brahmachari. That means you're going to have a family. You have to support the family. So here you have a job that's very practical for your spiritual life. You can go at any time, make your own hours. You don't have to associate with so many persons. In fact, most Krishna conscious programmers that I know, while they're sitting in their cubicle at their computer, they're, you know, listening to lectures, they're doing so many things, you know. They're looking at Krishna conscious websites and all these things going on, you know. So it's such a perfect job for becoming Krishna conscious. So I would say, why do you want to not take this job seriously? Why? So this is priority. You want a job that matches your spiritual priorities. Okay? When studying, the same thing happens. Of course, many of you have already made your choice about what to study. But for those who haven't made that choice and are facing a future choice, I always explain, don't study something that's going to consume all your energy so you have no time for your spiritual life. Just like in New Zealand, there's one young lady from Korea, and she was in New Zealand studying at the University in Wellington. She was studying architecture. And then she became attracted to Krishna consciousness. It's practically one of the... you can count on one hand the number of Korean devotees in the world. But she's one of them. So, and for some reason, Krishna consciousness is still trying to take off in Korea. In China, many devotees. But Korea and Japan are difficult. Especially Japan. Very difficult. So, she was studying architecture, and then she took up Krishna consciousness immediately after 1 month of knowing about it. And she saw the architecture curriculum, it's just taking up too much of my time. First of all, how many architects does the world need? But see, people who study architecture, they all have this dream. They're going to design the ultimate building, they'll be famous. Practically, though, few of them ever get a job doing what they want. So she could see that. It's just an ego thing, architecture. Yeah. It's not that there are unlimited buildings going up with unlimited possibilities for creative design. It's not like that. So, furthermore, she saw it's taking up so much time for such an impractical goal. So she was thinking, how can I study something that will that won't get in the way of my Krishna consciousness? So she decided, I'll study Korean. Yeah, she could, even though she's Korean, she could study Korean at the university. And that way her parents were satisfied. She's at the university, she's studying something. And of course, because she's Korean, studying Korean at the university is a breeze for her. So she has much time for Krishna kinds of activities. And she's also studying English, because she wants to translate Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam into Korean. So, this way, she's made her priorities. And, you know, she understands she's a lady and the career choice isn't so crucial because almost every lady, sooner or later, is going to marry and have children. So it's not like, you know, it's a life and death thing for her to choose the right money-making course. But her parents want her to go to university. So she's going to university, she's satisfying her parents, but she's doing things her way. Studying English so she can translate the shastras into Korean. And she's studying Korean because it's easy and she has much time for teaching Krishna consciousness to others. That's priority. Any other questions? You have another one? Let's see if someone else has a question. Yes.
I was having difficulty about envious in this study. I understand generally will have most common experience in the workplaces.
Mm-hmm.
So, because of so many like professionalism, we find people envying us and we still have to carry on with the work.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, off the hand, we can involve with the disturbed mind what we get from the work. We can involve in the spiritual activities after that, but still, we have to keep the work going in 8 hours and still you find people pulling the legs and attacking us.
Mm-hmm.
So
trying to cut the floor out from underneath you.
Exactly. And still we have to keep working with with good peace of mind and concentration.
Mm-hmm.
So what Maharaj will suggest us, how, because as even Krishna said, since nobody is, Arjuna is not envying, so he's going to teach, he's going to talk to him.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't go to them and just try to convince them.
No, you just have to deal with the situation in such a way that your life goes on.
Okay.
Mm. There will always be those kind of problems in this world. But you have a higher purpose. When you're doing your work, when the Krishna conscious person is doing his job, he's just doing it in such a way that he can maintain his own Krishna consciousness. You're not trying to prove yourself to anyone. You're just doing what you have to do in order to earn your living. And because your earnings are supporting a Krishna conscious life, and hopefully also because your earnings are supporting the teaching of Krishna consciousness to others, then it's easy for you to tolerate abuse because your heart is not into your job. You understand? It's not your everything for you. You understand? Just like if you walk around here and some dogs start to bark at you, some cats start to meow. Is it the end of life for you? Oh, I walked outside and this dog barked at me. You go about your business. Similarly, because your consciousness is set on Krishna conscious goals, if someone barks at you at work, your whole life doesn't fall apart. You tolerate it. Let the dogs have their day. Yeah. Let them have it. Your work is not your whole life. You're working to support a spiritual lifestyle and to help teach others Krishna consciousness. Therefore, your work is different.
But what I mean is that either of us, I don't want to have the list of mine. So, the other time, we involve accepting Krishna, consciousness, spiritual activities, well, that's good. But in this disturbed, in that state of disturbed mind, it's about 8 hours. So, what do you suggest?
Don't work for yourself. As long as you work for yourself, your mind will be disturbed. Learn how to work for Krishna's pleasure, and then you'll be peaceful at work. Just like Arjuna did not fight for himself. He fought for Krishna's pleasure. As the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita, those who want to enjoy the fruits of their own labor are misers. Therefore the mind is disturbed. Work for a higher purpose, to support a Krishna-conscious family, to support Krishna-conscious educational activities. Just like, because some devotees work, they are able to fund this whole weekend and make it available at such a low price. That's because some devotees are working. And they're not working for themselves, for selfish purposes. They're supporting their families, and they're using their money to increase the society of devotees, the family of devotees. So this effort here is a result of some devotees who are working. But they have a wider vision. They don't have selfish purposes, therefore they're peaceful. Even sometimes they have to go through turbulence at their job. You know, downsizing, you know, outsourcing, this, that, the other. Especially many of the devotees who support this weekend, they were in the IT sector. And, you know, it's very stressful. They take you on a couple of months, and then they clear the bench, and it's just very full of anxiety. But because their purpose is a high purpose, serving Krishna, they're not overwhelmed by these things. They do the best they can, knowing Krishna will take care of us. So you learn from them how to work in Krishna consciousness. I could say the same thing. You know, sometimes when I'm flying, strange persons sit next to me. I have to tolerate a 12-hour flight from Mumbai to Sydney, and some lady is sitting next to me trying to catch my attention. I cannot go to the flight attendant and say, move this lady out of her seat. I can't do that. I have to tolerate. She's trying to start a conversation. It can be some Australian lady, you know, very forward. And are you from India? I'm always interested in talking to people who India. What can you do? You know, press the button to signal the flight attendant. Please, can you move this lady? I'm a sannyasi. She's not going to be sitting next to me. What can you do? You have to tolerate. So what I usually do is just give, you know, single syllable answers. Yes. No. And finally, you know, she gets the hint, you know. So we all have things we have to tolerate. It's not simply in the working world. Anything you try to do in this world, there's always something to tolerate. But if your actions are for the pleasure of Krishna, then it's different. Anything else? Yes. One second. What is that? Okay, yes?
Association, you said that you have to be like very careful when you're associating with the people.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of Krishna Bhakti's person, when he is working like in offices or in a supermarket or like anywhere, so like it's very difficult to, like, you can't stop yourself to associate with the other people. So can you guide us like how to behave in the society so that they will not think like you are like a fanatic or
anything? Right. I explained this before. One of the members of the Melbourne devotee congregation, his name is Budimanta. He's now stationed in Delhi. I just saw him 2 weeks ago, but he was working in Melbourne for 10 years or so. He had an industrial management position as an engineer in charge of many persons. And he came to me once and said, you know, I have a problem that in my job as a highly placed manager with staff under me, I'm supposed to socialize. You cannot just, especially in Australia, you cannot just seal yourself off and ignore all the other people at work. They want to see how you're part of a team and how you're meshing nicely with others. And so you just cannot say, I don't talk to anyone, I just do my job. Otherwise, they won't think highly of you, and they'll say that you don't have the good qualities for, you know, being a part of this organization. So he was thinking like that. Whenever they would have gatherings at a restaurant or a pub or something like that, you know, he wouldn't go, So they couldn't figure him out, and so they started to feel uncomfortable around him, you know, like he's some kind of alien. And if he's a manager of others, this is not good, you know, because, you know, according to the management philosophies these days, you're supposed to be like the team leader, and this camaraderie and fraternity and all for one and one for all, you know, all that kind of thing. So he said, I don't even want to talk to them. I have nothing in common with them. I said, I don't believe that. I don't believe you have nothing in common with them. I said, the best thing is to find one thing that you feel comfortable talking about that they will relate to. Just one thing. Give one concession. I said, there must be one thing you like to talk about that they can relate to. Or not that you like to talk about it, but it's easy for you to talk about it. It doesn't, you know, it's not a load on your mind. So he said, oh, I know what it is. Whenever we have our annual corporation gathering and there's the cricket match, they always want me to be the captain because I'm the best. So I said, okay, just talk to them about cricket. That'll be your one thing that you talk to them about. And that way they get some kind of handle on you and they can feel comfortable. So he started doing that. He would go back to work on Monday morning. Oh, that match on Sunday. Let me tell you. Oh, they would listen. Yeah, you are our cricket expert. What is your opinion? What is your analysis? He would talk like that, then finish. And they would feel satisfied. Okay, he's a different guy. He's one of those really Indian religious guys. He doesn't go to the pub. He doesn't drink. But he sure knows his cricket. So that way they felt comfortable. You know, they could, how do you say, classify him in a way. They had some kind of handle on him, so they wouldn't feel like he's a complete alien. So that way, everyone was quite satisfied. All right, he doesn't look at porno magazines. He doesn't talk about disgusting things that we talk about, but he definitely knows his cricket. When you want to discuss cricket, you go talk to him. And then they would just talk cricket for a few minutes and leave him alone. And they felt satisfied. Okay, he's somewhat normal. And he felt satisfied in that he didn't have to engage in all kinds of unlimited nonsense talk, you know? So I recommended he do that. He did it, and it worked out fine for him. Because in many of your jobs, you just can't ignore everyone. And just, oh, I don't talk about those things. I don't talk about anything. You have to play the game a little bit, you know? It's part of the working experience. Even as a sannyasi, sometimes I have to talk to people, and like, if I see my relatives, you know, every 2 years I see my relatives, and, you know, they're not interested to hear about Krishna. At the same time, I have to, you know, maintain nice relations with them. So as soon as they want to talk about something, they want to hear something from me, and just as a nicety, I talk about something. What is my subject? Airlines. I could talk about airlines in such a way that they'll go, wow, really? And can you advise me? I want to take a vacation, fly to London. Which airlines is the best? And I can just tell them all, and they leave you alone. Okay. Yes, you have satisfied us. You are part of this world to some degree. That's all they want. And it's not that they want to talk to you all day about this. They just want a few minutes of something, and then their mind is peaceful. Oh, okay, you're not an alien. All right. So this is all part of living in the world as a devotee. You have to know these strategies. In this way, you don't have to fear that everyone's going to expect you to talk about unlimited material, temporary things continuously, and it's a good fear to have, but it's an easy thing to deal with. All right. So?
We'll be having breakfast now.
Okay. Is everyone ready for breakfast? How has the menu been? Very good?
Very good.
Okay. Who's in charge of the kitchen?
Gopal.
Yes. There's the head chef. He's spending so much time in the kitchen. He's actually the general manager. of the Melbourne Mahaprabhu Mandir, and he comes in to serve you all by cooking for you. Where is it in the business world that the general manager comes and cooks for I met him when he was attending university in Wellington, New Zealand. He was studying government administration. From the first time I met him, I told him that his plans to help people through government administration would not work. He has to go to a deeper level. So when he finished, he got his degree, and as soon as he got his degree, he came to help manage the government at Melbourne Mahaprabhu Mandir. And in a few months, he'll marry, he'll have the big wedding at the temple in April and so. But he's come here to cook for you all. He's my disciple. I don't get to see him so much. He's just in the kitchen cooking for you all. He has such an important responsibility in his management position, but yet he's investing his time just to cook for all of you. That is Krishna consciousness. Not that I have the high position, so. But no. He's understanding the real high position is to be the servant of everyone. That's the best kind of leader. The servant leader. So in Krishna consciousness, you have the opportunity to be that kind of leader. Understanding that you lead by serving others. So there you have such a nice example. The general manager of the temples come to cook for you all, spending all this time in the kitchen. He doesn't even get to come to the talks or anything. Just like we were explaining, other devotees, like Nityananda Priya, they're working a job. He has wife and child. Yet besides funding his family, he's using his income to fund this weekend. This is the exalted way to live. Not that, oh, why should I use my money to help pay the expenses this weekend when I could spend it on me? I can get a flash car. I can get a big home entertainment system. So, this is Krishna consciousness. The real pleasure comes from selfless service for Krishna. They're tasting something that no materialist could ever taste. So we invite you to also partake of this wonderful lifestyle. All right. We'll break for breakfast now. Thank you very much.